Throughout history, the suppression of energy technologies points to a pattern of inventors meeting untimely or suspicious ends, apparently protecting entrenched interests in the fossil fuel narrative and traditional power systems. Nikola Tesla, who died in poverty amid claims of suppressed wireless energy transmission ideas. Tom Ogle, whose vapor fuel system promised extraordinary mileage before his 1981 death from an overdose ruled accidental or suicidal, and Stanley Meyer, developer of a controversial water fuel cell, who perished in 1998 from a cerebral aneurysm despite persistent poisoning rumors.
He has developed what's called a water fuel cell. It has taken the place of his old gas tank. The water fuel cell breaks down water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. The hydrogen is used to run his dune buggy.
I don't care if you use rainwater, well water, city water, ocean water. If you don't have any fresh water, go ahead and use snow. If you don't have any snow available to you, then use salt water because there's no adverse effect to the fuel cell.
Meyer started working on this project 4 years ago. He's not a scientist. He isn't even a chemist. In fact, he never graduated from college. Meyer was determined, he says, to design something to protect this country from oil embargoes.
And we have calculated that if we take the dune buggy from Los Angeles to New York, we would roughly use 22 gallons of water.
The Pentagon flew a lieutenant colonel in last week to look at Meyer's invention. There's talk of possibly using it in the Star Wars defense program and to run army tanks.
Recently, Aaron Salter Jr., a retired police officer working as a security guard at a Topps grocery store in Buffalo, New York, was passionately developing a hydrogen electrolysis system to power vehicles with water as an alternative to gasoline.
You got your hydrogen for your electrolysis. You got your batteries. Your water.
I'm just gonna start it.
And that's the gas valve in the rear. It's in an off position. Vehicle is running on pure hydrogen.
He was tragically killed in the 2022 racially motivated mass shooting at that store.
The defendant's planning of a racially motivated attack occurred over a span of several months.
And just a mere days ago, on December 15th, 2025, Nuno Loureiro, a distinguished MIT professor and director of the Plasma Science and Fusion Center, specializing in fusion energy, a potentially limitless clean power source, was fatally shot in his Brookline home.
Many of you know that fusion is the process that powers stars. So the reason that they shine is because at their very core, there are fusion reactions going on that essentially release the energy that keeps the stars alive and shining. We speak of the plasma state of matter as the word that best describes the state at which the matter is at these very high pressures and temperatures that you find in the core of stars, such as the sun. And so essentially, in a sort of a slogan, kind of way, what we're trying to do at the Plasma Science and Fusion Center is to recreate star-like conditions on Earth, aiming to tap that energy, the fusion energy, for electricity or energy production. In case there's questions about why we're trying to do this, there's a long list of reasons that range from no polluting emissions to inexhaustible fuel supply, very energetic reactions, so 10 to the 7 more energetic than a chemical reaction, no risk of meltdowns or long-lived nuclear waste, civilization scale energy, and flexibility to generate fusion energy pretty much anywhere.
Apparently, a janitor named Derek, who worked as a janitor at Brown University, had previously, that is before the shooting, according to him, alerted the Brown University police that there was an intruder that had been lurking around the building, but yet nothing was done. We also learned that there were a number of electronic devices discovered in the storage unit that he had, and a number of other things, perhaps thumb drives that he had, all of which point to the idea that this was some elaborate plot. He did a lot of casing, a lot of pre-planning, a lot of recon.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. The established families, dug in for centuries with their iron grip around the throat of humanity, will never relinquish control. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Thank you.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
You're tuned into the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. You know, we're waiting on Donald Trump to give an address with Pete Hegseth. They're supposed to go live at, I believe, 3:30 today, Central Time. But they haven't gone live yet, but we're keeping an eye on that. And if Trump goes live, yeah, it's supposed to be 4:30 p.m. Eastern from Mar-a-Lago, joined by War Secretary Pete Hegseth and Navy Secretary John Fallon. So we're waiting for that to start. We'll keep an eye on it and bring it to you just as soon as it goes live. That was interesting. Just dropped minutes ago, I think, during the show. Megyn Kelly talks Ben Shapiro's betrayal and the MAGA reckoning at America Fest. As America Fest convened, the likes of Eric Trump, Tucker Carlson, Kelly, Shapiro, and other conservative stars, MAGA was anything but united. And basically, Megyn Kelly comes out saying, Megyn Kelly had no idea that Ben Shapiro planned to go after her when he launched into a scathing broadside against what he called charlatans and grifters in the conservative movement on the first night of the annual conference last week. His pointed inclusion of Kelly shocked the commentator, who has long considered Shapiro a friend. Wow. Sorry, sweetheart. He thought of you as something else, as useful at the time, but no longer, so you were to be discarded. But basically, Megyn Kelly came out and said, yeah, it's Ben Shapiro that's causing anti-Semitism to spread. It's Ben Shapiro and the Mark Levins of the world that are causing anti-Semites, not Tucker Carlson, which I think is accurate, which I think is true and accurate, and also maybe potentially part of the plan, because, you know, I see a lot of operations kind of going on right now, or a lot of hints at things, like the foreign minister of Israel, I suppose it was after the Bondi Beach shooting, sort of inspired by that, but he's been issuing declarations around the world telling Jews in every other country, come back to Israel. Come home to Israel. It's not safe for you out there. It's time to come back home. So, I mean, that obviously they just want, you know, bodies for their war machine. They need, you know, they're running low on recruits, or trying to recruit the ultra-Orthodox who aren't having any of it. So they're running out of people. So obviously they just need bodies thrown into the grist mill for their war operations. But I also think it's part of a wider move to try to consolidate Jewish populations in Israel as they attempt, you know, to form the Greater Israel Project, take over the Middle East, and, you know, form a independent superpower out from under the shadow of America, which is obviously their intention. And I guess that's sort of the starting point to understand Benjamin Netanyahu's upcoming visit to the United States. It'll be like something like his 11th visit this year. I mean, he's been here many, many times. Each time with the same agenda, with the same intent. To get Donald Trump to sign off on war with Iran. And as we've been covering for the entirety of Trump's administration and before, back since a week after the election in 2024, we were describing the ongoing shadow war between the Trump administration and Israel. And that's why it frustrates me when people are like, oh, Trump is an Israeli puppet. It's like, if you're paying attention, if you're reading between the lines, if you're paying attention to the details, and not starting with that assumption, but actually trying to find out what the truth is, I think you're more likely to discover that Trump has to do certain things for Israel, is compelled to put people in certain positions, appoint certain ambassadors, or not appoint Matt Gaetz to the AG. And so he'll serve them in some regards, but in the big picture sectors, he's not doing what they want. He didn't go to full war with Iran. And in fact, he was almost certainly blackmailed into doing the attack on Iran that he did. But ever since then, we've been saying that this is not satisfactory for Israel. They have wider plans. Their, you know, main goal, as I've been saying forever, was to use the Gaza conflict, parlay that into taking out Iran. And if they can take out Iran, then everything they've done up to this point will be worth it. If they don't take out Iran, then they'll have just ruined their reputation overseas, caused irreparable damage to their reputation amongst young people especially. You know, chickens that will come home to roost in a few years when, you know, nobody's voting for pro-Israel politicians and the support from America is withdrawn. I mean, this is an existential crisis for them. So they really need to get Iran, and they that hasn't changed, right? And Trump did what Trump does best. Honestly, I got to give it to him. I didn't like that he bombed Iran, and I still think that was a mistake in the first place. I'm sick of people going, oh, but you said it was going to be World War III, but it was just one hit. It's like, okay, well, my son shoots an arrow, you know, shoots an apple off my daughter's head with an arrow. I'm not going to say, oh, it's fine that he did that. Let him do it again. Right? It's like, well, okay, we got lucky. All right, we avoided a possible fate, but that wasn't a foregone conclusion. And honestly, you should be thanking Iran for not, you know, responding in a bigger way, which is why that never, you know, accelerated farther than it was. So Trump is live now. All right, let's go to Trump here. We'll see what he has to say, and I'll lay out, you know, what's coming from Israel as they again try to gin up war with Iran. Here's Trump.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, sir.
Beautiful. Wow. It's beautiful.
All right, so he's got some display posters of the Trump class ship. What does this mean?
So I want to wish everybody a big hello and Merry Christmas and welcome to Mar-a-Lago for this exciting announcement of the new Golden Fleet. We're calling it the Golden Fleet that we're building for the United States Navy. As you know, we're desperately in need of ships. Our ships are, some of them have gotten old and tired and obsolete, and we're going to go the exact opposite direction. We're delighted to be joined by Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, who's doing a fantastic job, and Secretary of the Navy John Phelan. Marco Rubio is here, who gave a great few words toward the end of last week. He spoke for a couple of hours on what a good job we're doing, which is true. As Commander-in-Chief, it's my great honor to announce that I have approved a plan for the Navy to begin the construction of two brand-new, very large, largest we've ever built, battleships. You know, you used to build the Iowa, the Missouri, the Wisconsin, the Alabama, many others. We had big battleships. These are bigger, but they will have 100 times the, they'll be 100 times the force, the power, and there's never been anything like these ships. These have been under design consideration for a long time. And it started with me in my first term, because I said, why aren't we doing battleships like we used to? And the these are the best in the world. They'll be the fastest, the biggest, and by far 100 times more powerful than any battleship ever built. So if you look at the Iowa, the Missouri, Wisconsin, Alabama, and others, but they were similar in size, some a little bit bigger than the others. But if you take the biggest one, it's 100 times more powerful. They're longer by a little bit, but and they're bigger. They're bigger ships, but they hold much more. They use the word lethality. Battleships are the largest, sturdiest, and most heavily armed vessel built specifically for naval combat. While America has built many new warships over the years, they've tended to be smaller, much smaller, and not conducive to where we are and where we're going, and peace through strength. But including, we've been building aircraft carriers. We're going to be upping that also. We're going to be going to a superior aircraft. We have the Ford class. We're going to be upping that to a different class of aircraft carrier. And we haven't built a battleship since 1994. These cutting-edge vessels will be some of the most lethal surface warfare ships. It will be actually the most ever built other than our submarines. We have submarines which will have, in many ways, even more lethality, and we have many of them under construction. Each one of these will be the largest battleship in the history of our country, the largest battleship in the history of the world ever built. And again, it's 100 times more powerful than the previous Iowa class, it's called. Those are the big ones that you'd see on a show. Victory at Sea. I don't know if anyone's seen Victory at Sea, but it was a classic. They'll help maintain American military supremacy, revive the American shipbuilding industry, and inspire fear in America's enemies all over the world. We want respect. We're going to have it. We already have it. We're more respected now than we ever were. A year and a half ago, they laughed at us. Now they respect us again at levels that they've never respected us. We envision that these two ships, we're talking about 10, but we're going to start with 2, and we're going to quickly morph into 10. And ultimately, we think it's going to be anywhere from 20 to 25 of these. But we're starting with the first 2 immediately, and we're going to then be very quickly involved with, I think, we're going to do another 8. And then we're going to ultimately and pretty quickly have a total of about 20 to 25. We'll make that determination. We envision that these ships will be the first of a whole new class of battleships to be produced in the years to come. From Theodore Roosevelt, the Great White Fleet, you remember that? The Great White Fleet, to the legendary USS Missouri, whose massive guns helped win World War II. America's battleships have always been unmistakable symbols of national power. We stopped making them for whatever reason, I don't know. And I want to congratulate John Thelen, who is your Secretary of the Navy. He came to me the first day we met. He talked about battleships, and I said, you're absolutely on the right track. He said, why are we doing other things? We have missiles, which are much more expensive. By the way, these battleships have tremendous numbers of missiles, but they also have guns. And in many ways, guns can do the trick just as well as missiles at a tiny fraction of the cost. Once completed, these new 30 to 40,000 ton plus vessels will be the flagships of the American naval fleet, and there has never been anything built like them. And I just want to be very clear that we're building them here. We're working with others, but we're building them here. We have great Navy yards. We'll be negotiating with some of the companies that are running those yards, taking over the yards. We used to build a ship a day during World War II. Now we don't do ships very much anymore. We do military ships. We do submarines. By the way, we're 15 to 20 years advanced in our submarines over anybody else. That was one of the things that I did in my first term. We make the best submarines by far in the world. We're at least 15 years advanced ahead of anybody else in submarine development. Most powerful, that's right, the most powerful weapon anywhere in the world, undetectable. So the battleships are going to be armed just in terms of guns and missiles at the highest level. They'll also have hypersonic weapons, many hypersonic weapons, state-of-the-art electric rail guns, and even the high-powered lasers that you've been starting to read about. We have lasers where you aim the laser at a target and it just wipes it out. We're going to have, there'll be the most sophisticated lasers in the world, and the most sophisticated laser in the world will be on the battleships that we're building. They'll also carry the nuclear-armed, sea-launched cruise missiles currently under development, which will be instituted pretty quickly, but they're under development and they've proven to be extremely lethal. The U.S. Navy will lead the design of these ships along with me, because I'm a very aesthetic person, alongside our partners in American industry. And we're going to have Pete Hegseth and Marco and a lot of very talented people involved. But a lot of it's already been done. We've been doing this for months. The construction will create thousands of American jobs. We're going to have the jobs be created. I mean, already we have factories being built unrelated to this, although AI will be a big factor when it comes to these ships. They'll be very AI controlled. Today's announcement is yet another step in our mission to make the United States Navy stronger than ever before. Again, when you talk about 100 times the power of these massive ships that we had years ago, it's pretty amazing. And next week, I'm going to meet with the defense prime contractors. I'm going to meet with them here, Florida. And we're going to be talking about production schedules because they're too slow. We have many countries, allies, that are wanting to buy. We make the greatest equipment in the world by far. Nobody's even close, but they don't produce them fast enough. So we're going to be meeting with them to talk about the production schedules. We're going to have strong production schedules. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is to build new plants. Even with the F-35, we have many people want the F-35 fighter jet, and it takes too long to deliver them to allies or to ourselves. It takes too long. The only way they're going to be able to deliver them is if they build new plants. They don't want to build new plants because that's expensive. So we're going to be discussing.
All right, folks. So this is Donald Trump live in Mar-a-Lago with Hegseth and Phelan, the Secretaries of War and the Navy, announcing new Trump-class battleships. Which, okay, that's cool. I want to be excited about it. I do. I really do. American manufacturing, sailing the high seas. I wish I could get on board with this. Battleships, really? Battleships. Battleships have been defunct since World War I. Well, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about? Now, I imagine they've taken this into consideration. I assume the, you know, people in the Navy designing these things understand just as well as I do the changes in modern warfare. I just have trouble understanding how a large, expensive, singular, unified piece of equipment is going to stand up against the modern state of decentralized swarm drone warfare. I just feel like maybe this is a chance to look back in history, see battleships have not been a good investment for 100 years. This lesson was learned by Nazi Germany in a very powerful way when the Tirpitz, they made these two giant battleships just ahead of World War II. It's actually called Plan Z, and it was supposed to take place like 5 years after the war started. But they built these two giant battleships, the Bismarck and the Tirpitz. The Bismarck sank one British vessel, and then itself was sunk. And like when you sink a battleship, it's gone, you know? I mean, it takes billions of dollars to build a battleship, and they get one lucky strike, and it's over. That's why I'm sort of like, why are we doing this? Like, when you've got hypersonic missiles and drone warfare and drone boats, I mean, really, you want to invest this much in giant floating targets? I don't think this is a good idea. And so, you know, like the Bismarck sunk after sinking the hood, hunted down and destroyed. And then the Tirpitz never even got out of dock. It was called like a fleet in waiting, a fleet in being or something like that. But basically, they spent billions of dollars, had thousands of people manning this battleship, never left the dock, never sank, never shot a single bullet in anger. And so when you look at that, you're like, yeah, the amount of money and time and resources they poured into building these battleships probably could have won them the war. If they'd spent that money on tanks, if they'd spent that money on building defenses, like yeah, you may have won the war, but instead they poured it all into this platform, this combat platform that was defunct. That wasn't the way you project power. There's a reason that we don't build battleships anymore. We have aircraft carriers. They took over battleships. They do what battleships did, but better than battleships. And it's like, okay, if this is just a big jobs program, which I also understand, it's practically the only manufacturing we even do anymore. I've said this before. In this weird way, it's weapons manufacturing that's like saving the American economy because it's one of the only industries where you have to hire American citizens. If you're working on like top secret stuff or anything, you know, defense contract related, you have to hire American citizens. So it's like, other than Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and, you know, all these other weapons manufacturers, we don't have a lot of manufacturing here. So I get the impulse to be like, let's just build ships, spend money on supplies, employ people, project power. Obviously, Trump has found gunboat diplomacy extremely useful. But it's like, you could do something else to create jobs, you know? You know, during the 1930s, we created a lot of jobs here in the United States, and, you know, they built like 100 dams in Texas. Basically, every lake in Texas now that exists was built by FDR during the jobs program. So I don't know. Maybe you could do. I'd rather have you know, national parks and new dams and, I don't know, things like that than battleships. But I don't know. You know, I'm sure the Navy thought about this. I'm sure they've looked into this. It just seems very weird to me to be building battleships 100 years after they stopped being effective in war. But what do I know? I guess it's cool. It's very cool. I don't know. Has something happened in warfare that makes battleships feasible again? I guess if they're just platforms for launching drones, like, I guess you don't need aircraft carriers if you don't have jets. Maybe that's what they're intending. Maybe, you know, battleships armed with direct energy weapons, you know, make it a different situation, but I don't know. I think of about 2,000 other things I'd rather have Trump announce right now, but new battleships just in time for Christmas. Perfect. Okay. All right. Okie dokie. That's fine, I guess. Now, let's talk about what these may be used for, why we may need new battleships. We'll do that in the next segment. We're going to be joined by Rex Jones in the third hour. I'm going to get into why I think Israel is trying to get America into Iran and a bunch of trends I see pointing in that direction here on the other side of this. This next segment is going to be good. And then I want to get in with Rex to what's going on in Australia, because that is a whole other bucket of worms. I do have to remind you, though, go today. In fact, right now. In fact, this very minute, to thealexjonesstore.com for the final days of the Christmas sale, massive blockbuster sale. By the way, Ultimate Power Energy and Focus drink mix, brand new product, 30% off by purchasing three or more bottles. That's an introductory sale for what promises to be probably one of our most best-selling products of all time. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Get your Ultimate Power today while supplies last.
I need you to support the broadcast financially. And I just need those of you on the fence that have never gone to thealexjonesstore.com to go get the Ultra Methylene Blue. I'm only going to sell something that's really good for you and works great. Because again, a good salesman sells a product that works and is good and that I use. So take the challenge, go to thealexjonesstore.com now and get Ultra Methylene Blue. And it's the greatest because it's so good, it hits in like 30 minutes. But the real effects happen the days and weeks as it builds up in you. The Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, the bovine colostrum, that's going to take a few weeks to kick in. You get your wife pregnant, she'd have a baby for 9 months, folks. You only got to wait a few weeks with this. The effects of these are incredible. Again, I can do hours on each product, and these are the best. You study Irish sea moss, you study Shilajit, you study bovine colostrum. It's all the rage forever. These are sure things. I don't go get stuff that isn't already a sure thing. It's so easy. 90% of my waking hours is doing nothing but studying and broadcasting and fighting. And I just want you to keep me commissioned in this fight. Where have you seen results like this? And it's not me. I'm not the opposite of prideful. I'm God-fearing. I fear nothing but God. I'm actually fearful of the position I've been put in by God that I'm like, you need to do a better job. It's the opposite. I'm mad at myself. The crew can tell you behind the scenes. I am pissed off at myself. I am angry that I've been given so much power and I'm not executing it correctly. But God loves sudden death over time. God loves keeping you humble. When you buy from us, you're going to get a great product and you're betting on an organization that has the track record of victory. That's why the bad guys hate us. We know what we're doing. We know how to stop them. They want us off air. If I'm going to sell you something because I'm self-funded, it's going to work. You are missing out so bad if you don't get our Ultra DNA Revival new product, our incredible highest quality, the very best type of creatine gummies and powder, our bovine colostrum, all of it. 60% off right now. It ends next week. Get your orders in by tomorrow. You'll get it anywhere in the country before Christmas. But we need the support. And like I said, I'm out of money. I'm out of stuff to sell. I'm out of whatever. We have about a $400,000 underage going into next month. I mean, literally, to pay the rent and the payroll. I've got my Rolodex out. And I mean, there'll be no strings attached. But I'm starting to call people and folks saying, all right, you know, give me money. Because I ain't giving up. As much as I don't like begging for money, I give it up to the New World Order and rolling over and dying. I hate that even more. But I'm literally down to the point now. My parents have lost everything they got. I don't have anything. I don't care. I'm happier than ever. I don't give. I never had a bunch of stuff. But it doesn't matter when you're up against the wall and you ain't got no more to give. You understand? I've given you everything I got. And quite frankly, I'm more alive. I'm stronger. I'm smarter than I've ever been. In fact, I'm high as a kite in this fight. I love this. But the fact is only a fraction of our people are engaged. Oh, the Muslims are engaged. The Jews are engaged. I'm not attacking either group. You know why they're so powerful? They're engaged. They're involved in their group. Well, who are we? Well, we're Americans of every race, color, and creed that just want freedom and our country and our republic. Well, then you better start acting like it.
Wake up, folks. Spread this message. The globalist machine is tightening the chains, and they're after your freedoms.
The Podesta plan is in operation.
Don't worry. It's safe and effective.
Don't you just love my GMO potatoes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is unfolding before our very eyes. We must question everything.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We're going to talk about war now. The war that Israel wants more than anything. And I honestly struggle to know how to talk about this because it's also deeply interconnected, because it's also intertwined, because you can't talk about free speech without talking about the censorship on anti-Semitism, which is there as part of the overall attempt to control all information flows because they want war with Iran. Like it all just, and then you got the Epstein file, and it all sort of falls back in on itself. And so, again, I'm trying to figure out where to even start with this. I guess we can start with this from AOL.com. Netanyahu plans to brief Trump on possible new Iran strikes. Israeli officials have grown increasingly concerned that Iran is expanding production of its ballistic missiles program, which was damaged by Israeli military strikes earlier this year, and are preparing to brief President Donald Trump about options and for attacking it again, according to a person with direct knowledge of the plans, and four former U.S. officials briefed on the plans. Okay, so basically they realize, they've learned that the weapons of mass destruction lie doesn't work on us anymore. That's basically what's happened here. And by the way, you look at the MAGA Civil War, you look at sort of the chaos that the Republican Party is in. a lot of people point to the assassination of Charlie Kirk as being sort of the point where everything went off the rails. I'd say it was the attack on Iran. I think when Trump attacked Iran, that was sort of the breaking point for a lot of people, myself included. And I think the Charlie Kirk assassination was swept up in the fallout of that. But that was sort of the biggest and most blatant expression of this secretive, shadowy war taking place inside the Trump administration for so long, as we've been reporting and sort of, you know, as developments arise, bring you updates to this. And as far as I can tell, I'm like the only person framing it this way, connecting all of these different things. The Signalgate scandal with Pete Hegseth, they're trying to oust him because he didn't want war with Iran. At the same time, they're ousting assistants to him and assistants to J.D. Vance that were against Iran. And the pressure on Charlie Kirk was increasing because he was arguing against Iran. Trump apparently blew up at him. So again, like this is the conflict going on behind the scenes that bubbles up, that we see bits of it, but you know, no one ties it all together. It seems obvious to me where all this is coming from, where it's all going. Like the Signalgate is the best example. They've got this Mike Waltz guy who leaks the Signalgate chat to his fellow Zionist friend at the Atlantic. It blows up. It's discovered that Mike Waltz is in communication with Netanyahu behind Trump's back. When Netanyahu's coming here to try to pressure Trump into bombing Iran, Trump's assistant or Trump's like deputy, Mike Waltz, is secretly communicating with Netanyahu to try to, you know, feed him strategy to get Trump to go into a war with Iran. I mean, eventually he's forced to resign and, you know, he becomes like a UN ambassador or something, because obviously we can't actually ever punish these guys for real. Can't ever actually treat them with any, you know, sincere concern for what they've done. He committed treason after all. He tried to essentially blackmail Trump into dropping Pete Hegseth so that we could go to war with Iran. Like, kind of a big deal for me, but, you know, slap on the wrist for him. And then we saw it again about 2 weeks ago. We saw not only the Signal scandal flare up again, where they tried to claim, oh, you know, we've looked at it, and actually it looks like he did put out, you know, classified information. Maybe PDEC, maybe Signalgate really is a scandal we need to pay attention to. And that didn't really go anywhere, though. And then what was the other thing with Pete Hegseth like 2 weeks ago? I can't even remember. It mattered so little. It was such a fabricated, you know, it was the double taps on the boats, right? Again, nothing to do with the double taps on the boats. They just want to oust Pete Hegseth because he doesn't want to go to war with Iran. That's what all of this has to do with. Okay? Right, the signing of, you know, pledge of protection with Qatar in response to this. So what happens is Israel has agents placed highly up all throughout our government, including congressmen, senators, right? Some of them are very obvious, like we know who they are, which is why we look to them when trying to determine what the strategy is here. I'd say the two most prominent senators would be Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham. And I've got a lot of them, you know, what they're talking about today. But it sounds like they've got all these people in the government. They've got people feeding information to Donald Trump, false information, that even when Tulsi Gabbard comes out and says, I'm the ODNI and I'm telling you Iran is 2 years from a nuclear bomb, Trump's like, well, I have different information. It's like, okay, well, it's not coming from an American intelligence source. Where do you think it's coming from? So they're feeding him fake information. They're stopping him from, you know, getting real info about, you know, like how we feel about all this. They're trying to out Pete Hegseth. Trump is, you know, being forced to do this. We've heard little bits of this, like J.D. Vance going, hey, you know, the peace deal we got, we had to use some leverage to get that. Okay, so they're coming out and telling you, hey, Israel is trying to force us to do something. We're pushing back. We're doing things Israel doesn't like. We're, you know, have the initiative against them. But they can't just come out and say that. It has to all be, you know, doublespeak. But obviously Trump has not been satisfied with his, you know, role in all of this and has done everything he can to keep us out of war with Iran. But they have a lot of pressure to bring to bear. And it's not just the Epstein blackmail stuff. Okay? And it's not just the people inside the government, you know, threatening false flags. So obviously there's so and then to explain this from the Israeli perspective, they think Trump is going to give them everything they want. They start making these big ambitious plans for taking over all of Gaza and expelling everybody overseas. I really think maybe as a consequence of Charlie Kirk being killed, remember, it was right after Charlie Kirk got killed, Trump came out and they were like, they kicked the ADL off of advising the FBI. They signed the thing with Qatar saying they were protecting them. And he forced the peace deal with Gaza. Now, I wonder if Charlie Kirk's assassination didn't have something to do with that. That may have been some of the leverage that J.D. Vance was talking about, or it may have been Trump just going, this is BS. I'm not messing. He kind of had a Charlie Kirk moment. Charlie Kirk says, I'm done with this. You know, maybe Trump got to that point. Regardless, Israel thought they were going to get Gaza. They're frustrated that they weren't able to take that all over. They're frustrated that there's a ceasefire. They're breaking the ceasefire on a daily basis. Average, they kill two Palestinians a day since the ceasefire has been established. They're trying to break it. They're trying to get out of it. They're bombing the hell out of South Lebanon. They're trying to use diplomatic pressure from the United States to oust Hezbollah in Lebanon. They just took over the Golan Heights. Trump just signed that over to them and celebrated it in his Hanukkah announcement. They're expanding into Syria, operating inside Syria. They're massively expanding West Bank settlements. Like, they have no intention of slowing down. They have no intention of even moderating their expansionist programs. They've just moved to different locations, different places. All right. We're not bombing Gaza anymore. We're bombing Venezuela. We're not, you know, going after Iran. We're diplomatically trying to deal with Hezbollah. Again, all part of the same attacks, all part of the same mission, the greater Israel mission. Okay. So with all of that as background, we have some other things cropping up. Like I said, we had another round of trying to oust Pete Hegseth a couple weeks ago. Okay, it didn't work, but it would have been nice to have him out and have a, you know, Zionist commander, you know, real Israel first commander in there, because it seems like this week they're launching a new attack to try to get us into war with Iran. Previously, it was weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons. Oh my gosh, if they get a nuclear weapon, they'll use it on America. We have to stop them. That wasn't very convincing. Slash, they bombed the Fordo site and said, okay, we took care of that. That's not a threat anymore. And so Israel went, ah, crap. Well, all right, we can't say nuclear bomb in 2 weeks like we've been saying for 20 plus years. What else can we say? Now, so again, we are beating Israel in the information front. And all of this is a consequence of that fact, right? They weren't able to do what they're doing in Gaza, so they're moving on to the West Bank. They, you know, can't get us to go to war with nuclear weapons, so now they're talking about the ballistic weapon systems. Like, it's just a constant push, try to get us into war with Iran, whatever excuse they can bring to bear. Obviously, the weapons mass destruction wasn't working, so now they're moving over to the ballistic weapons, which isn't a very good sell, because it's not really a threat to us. Actually, that's a threat to Israel and not us. So we don't really have to concern ourselves that much with it. But the conflict between Israel and Trump is heating up. And I even think, Nick Fuentes is right about J.D. Vance, more or less, that he's intended to be the next president and was intended to serve the people that made him, who include Peter Thiel and Palantir and the entire, you know, Zionist diaspora power structure. But I don't think he's ideologically dedicated to them. And I think that more and more I'm seeing hints that he's like signaling that. And I think they're getting that signal. I don't think it's a coincidence that you have J.D. Vance refusing to go along with the cancellations, Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, etc. He doesn't go along with the, you know, trying to destroy the young Republicans over the text messages. Oh my God, Nazis, we have to oust them. No, he doesn't go with that. He goes out on TPUSA stage and says, you know, you don't have to be ashamed of being white. He's kind of off the reservation. These aren't things that you'll ever hear Ted Cruz or Lindsey Graham saying. So is he just that deep cover? Is it just laying enough camo to, make us think, okay, he's not controlled. It could be, very well could be. But then around the same time, you have this. Ted Cruz weighs another presidential run, setting up clash with Vance. His friend Morton Klein, president of the Zionist Organization of America, told Cruz he believed that, quote, Jew hatred and Israel bashing were on the rise on the right and that something had to be done about it. Cruz, who'd begun a series of speeches decrying anti-Semitism in the GOP, told Klein he'd been fielding requests from people urging him to run for president in 2028. So it seems like maybe they're getting cold feet with Vance. Maybe he's not the ideologue that Ted Cruz is. So maybe now they're setting up Ted Cruz to go, hey, JD, you better fall back in line or we're going to set up Ted Cruz to take you out. And it's all over anti-Semitism, as said in the Washington Post article right there, the first paragraph. It's about anti-Semitism. The Zionist Organization of America is encouraging Ted Cruz to do this. At the same time, you have this massive push to consolidate the Republican Party into Israel's hands. Clip 15 here. This is Lindsey Graham, who, again, we don't have to speculate, is absolutely 100% fully and genuinely dedicated to the Zionist cause. Let's go to clip 15 here. This is Lindsey Graham basically saying, Israel's taken over the Republican Party and will gatekeep anybody who doesn't serve them. Let's watch.
I think support for Israel is strong in the Republican Party. I can't imagine a nominee in 2028 being the Republican nominee. If you want to run for president as a Republican in 2028 and you don't show strong support for Israel, I don't think you can win. To our friends on the Democratic side, I hope you'll up your game. I hope you'll realize that Israel's not the problem. The problem for peace is not Israel. Israel signed an agreement with six Arab countries. The problem in the region is Iran, Hamas, and Hezbollah. They're the ones that want to destroy Israel.
All right, this might be a good time to bring up the West Bank settlements because they've been a deliberate and brutal provocation against the communities that live there, and it's been increasing, and it's been going on for 70 years at this point, but they've really increased the viciousness and the brutality and the number of these very recently. Israel's cabinet approves 19 new settlements in West Bank, finance minister says. The settlements include two that were previously evacuated during a 2005 disengagement plan, according to finance minister Smotrich, who's pushed a settlement expansion area in the West Bank. Here you can see some of the West Bank settlements as they've cropped up. New York Times has done a big visual spread of this that's pretty impressive, actually, talking about this. Now, by the way, a lot of these settlements in the West Bank, like there's a particular, particularly disturbing aspect of this, which is that it's Advent, and like we're reading these stories about these very communities, about Mary and Joseph walking through the West Bank to give birth to the Son of God, and it's like, this is the location, the place where the Lord Jesus Christ was born in a stable and laid in a manger as the salvation of the world. That's the site of these brutal arson attacks, vicious depopulation campaigns. It really is kind of disturbing, all of it, kind of sickening. But it's also a slap in Trump's face. Israel approves 19 new settlements in occupied West Bank. Land grab inside Israel's escalating campaign for control of the West Bank. This is from the New York Times. And in fact, they have a video of it that I believe I put in there. Clip 39 here we can play as B-roll. Land grab inside Israel's escalating campaign for control of the West Bank. Olive grove by olive grove, sheep pasture by sheep pasture, village by village. The idea of a Palestinian state is withering in the West Bank. So a lot of these communities are Christian communities, by the way. This isn't a Jews versus Muslim false dichotomy. There are communities that are entirely Christian and have been there since Jesus walked on the earth that are being eradicated by Israeli expansion. Armed Israeli settlers, also often protected by soldiers, harass and attack Palestinian villagers daily with the undisguised goal of driving them out. Over the past 2 years, Israeli settlers have established a record number of new outposts in the occupied territory. The goal is to win on the ground what might be otherwise lost at the negotiating table. Even as the war in Gaza commanded the world's attention over the past 2 years, the facts on the ground were shifting in the West Bank, intensifying the battle for control of the lands of Bethlehem and Jericho, Ramallah and Hebron. Since October 7th, 2023, attacks on Israel by Palestinian militants from Gaza, Israel's new far-right government has embraced a playbook of expanding settlements across the West Bank, transforming the region piece by piece from a patchwork of connected Palestinian villages to a collection of Israeli neighborhoods. The unrelenting violent campaign by these settlers that critics say is largely tolerated by the Israeli military consists of brutal harassment, beatings, even killings, as well as high-impact roadblocks and village closures. Because, of course, it's an apartheid system where you can have highways where Palestinians have to go on this highway and they have to go through a checkpoint and they have to be questioned and it can be detained indefinitely with no proof. And then the Israelis get the free highway that just goes right through and circumvents all of the checkpoints. And that's a model for the rest of the world, by the way. So they approved 19 new settlements. Now, just weeks ago, Donald Trump... Well, first of all, let's just go to clip 13 here. This was a few days ago. This was him at the Hanukkah celebration bragging about all he'd done for Israel, including helping them to claim control of the Golan Heights that they've been illegally occupying for the last 60 or 70 years. Here's Trump celebrating how he signed it over to Israel. It's worth trillions of dollars, but he granted it to them. So just a reminder of how friendly and how nice and how good Trump has been for Israel. As we talk about how they're straight up betraying him and slapping him in the face. Here he is celebrating his slavish devotion to them.
I learned enough and I signed the Golan Heights, the rights to the Golan Heights over to Israel. Nobody thought that was possible to get. They've been working on it for 70 years, Mark. 70 years. You know, planes would fly into places that have meetings that would last 2-3 days. All they talked about was the Golan Heights, right, Jason? And nobody ever did anything, but I did it, and we did it quickly. And I say, good luck to you. Then I found out the value of it, trillions of dollars. It could be worth, if you think, trillions of dollars. I said, you know, maybe I should have asked him for something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe you should have asked him for something. We've been reporting on this for years, since before Trump was in office again. Genie Oil, it's like all of Trump's biggest Jewish donors. They all owned the oil company. They claimed rights in the Golan Heights, but the Golan Heights has been... Anyway, he gave it to him. He gave it to him because he loves him so much. And in return, they're betraying him. Literally slapping him in the face. This is him from a few months ago. I mean... I believe this was during the settlement of the Gaza ceasefire. So this would have been in the summer, right? So this is a few months ago, earlier this summer. Here's Donald Trump when asked about Israel's plans to massively expand West Bank settlements that they just did. Let's watch.
Gaza, did you promise leaders this week that you would not allow Israel to annex the West Bank? Is that something that you
said? I will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. No, I will not allow it. It's not going to happen.
Did you speak with Netanyahu about this?
Yeah, but I'm not going to allow it. Whether I spoke to him or not, I did. But I'm not allowing Israel to annex the West Bank. There's been enough. It's time to stop now, okay?
Enough. It's time to stop. I will not allow it. And in exchange, they just massively expand their settlement operations and improve 19 new settlements in the occupied territory. A flagrant slap in the face to Donald Trump. And I said at the time, I was like, that's pretty... ballsy thing for Trump to say, because typically he never gives a hardcore answer like that. I remember the time that video dropped, I went, wow, he really just said, no, it's not going to happen. Typically it's like, well, we don't want to see that and we'll see if, and we'll, that's a part of the talks. But there he said, no, I will not allow more West Bank settlements. Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? I suspect that they're doing this to deliberately provoke Trump. I think they're doing this so that then when Netanyahu comes to D.C., this can be part of the negotiations as they try to rope Trump into war with Iran. You know, maybe he can come out and go, they were doing settlements, but I got them to reverse the settlements. Maybe that's why they're doing it. Because otherwise, it doesn't really make any sense, right? If they're coming to the U.S. to try to get Trump into war with Iran, which is what they're doing, I'm going to have more proof than you could possibly need. Why would they do something so obviously insulting and disrespectful to him? Well, as a show of power, maybe. Put him in his place. Show him how much they actually take his threat seriously. Could be that. Which is kind of humiliating, and Trump should do something about it. Or it's a negotiation tactic. Well, I mean, that would be a negotiation tactic too. But yeah, maybe it's something that they know Trump doesn't want. They're doing it on purpose so they can pretend to capitulate to him. As part of the settlement, the agreement, whatever they're going to come to. Now, the reason it's like certain that they're again trying to get us to go to war with Iran is because they're actually telling us this. Let's go to clip number 37 here. This is Israeli media laying out their thinking before Netanyahu's meeting with Trump. Let's watch.
The main problem with the ballistic missile story is that they've caught on to the daylight, the gap between Israel and the United States. What's happened here is that Donald Trump gave his word and then broke it. We will not allow Iran to have nuclear weapons, but he didn't talk about conventional weapons, the ballistic missiles that threaten Israel. They threaten Israel to such an extent that Netanyahu himself, in a video announcing to the Israeli people that he was launching Operation Nation of Lions, he said that two existential threats have developed, the nuclear threat you've known about for years, but also the threat of thousands of ballistic missiles. What happened since then? The Iranians are not afraid of acting on the nuclear front. We know they have not even extracted the enriched material buried there underground, but they are very intensifying their experiments with ballistic missiles, either because they think it's threatening or because, as Netanyahu says, it's an existential threat to Israel. We also have a race between the number of their missiles and a number of our missiles, and let's say that both countries need to recover on this front. Let's ask the question now, and here I don't have an answer. When Netanyahu goes to Washington to talk to Trump about this, is he talking to him about a combined attack, which seems a bit far-fetched to me because the Americans really have no intention of getting involved in a conventional weapons conflict anywhere in the world, otherwise they would never get out of it, or is he content to give Israel permission to attack on its own with the U.S. providing a defensive umbrella? It should be said in the context that there's a big debate in the Israeli cabinet and at the top whether it's possible to launch an attack every 6 months. You cannot, unlike the nuclear project, you cannot eliminate the Iranian ballistic threat. It's unsustainable. It is sustainable to come to every 6 months, 8 months, and launch another round, which includes them firing at us and all the flights leaving Israel and then the implications for the economy. There's no decision in Israel. There's no decision in the U.S. They will discuss it there. So that's their problem, is that they don't have the nuclear boogeyman anymore. Either Trump destroyed it on Fordo and it's no longer a threat, or he didn't destroy it, so that type of operation isn't effective against the nuclear, it's not an effective nuclear deterrent. Now, the real twist of this is that it's almost certain that Israel threatened to use a nuclear weapon on Iran, and that was probably the deciding factor that forced Trump into participation. Why he decided he had to bomb eventually is because they threatened to use a nuclear bomb. I can show you those videos on the other side and explain how that's a regular tactic that Israel uses. That explains why America is willing to go to war for Israel, because if we don't, they'll start World War III and it'll be billions of people dead. They're literally holding a gun to the world's head. Now I've got a breaking bombshell story here. The DOJ has released a shocking fake video of Jeffrey Epstein's suicide as part of the file dump. We'll show you that video on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You financed it. You paid for it with your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWarsStore.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King. Make no peace with evil, say Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me. And it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy, in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before their hatch. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you will be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.